programs to this, you know, and this caucus in the morning.
For how long?
Plenary?
No.
I don't know.
Some rural law.
Yeah.
Just one law?
I don't know.
It could be a few.
Could be a few, yes. So that's effectively means we can't meet on Thursday.
And the deeds act, you want to talk on that?
I had thought we would use this week to be done with the three bills that have been hanging around. Criminal law sexual amendment bill, the judicial matters amendment bill, which we're going to deal with this morning, and the South African Human Rights Commission bill. We could still do that, depending on how well we go today and tomorrow. But essentially, I'm hoping that we can get these three bills behind us. The ANC assured me that they will finalize their name for appointment to the Human Rights Commission, and hopefully they will bring that name forward tomorrow morning. But today, we're dealing with the judicial matters. So I'm going to ask to welcome Mr. Bassett and Mr. Robertson, forgive me, to address us on the submissions received and the department and ministry's responses thereto.
Thank you very much, Chair. We did distribute a document, it's a summary of the comments received. There weren't very many comments in the departmental responses. I'm going to ask Mr. Robertson to deal with it. I'd just like to apologize on behalf of Ms. Tonda Zilis-Kosana. She was supposed to be here to deal with the child justice issues. She's got another urgent commitment, so I apologize on her behalf, but we will deal with the child justice issues as well.
Okay.
I'm going to ask Mr. Robertson to take us through what the comments are about and our responses to them.
Mr. Robertson. Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. The first comment received from the KBAR Council relates to Clause 6A of the bill. This clause amends Section 271B 1A of the Criminal Procedure Act to provide that the person may apply for expungement of his or her criminal record if the person convicted of an offence as a child has promised the commission of offence and the court may support in terms of Section 219, 1A and B of the Criminal Procedure Act. The Cape Bar Council pointed out the drafting mistake on the part of the department, namely in the first sentence of the substituted paragraph 1A of Section 271B of the Criminal Procedure Act should be amended by the insertion in the first line of the word on after the word sentences. And with this, the department agrees.
Okay.
The second comment we received from the second clause for discussion is clause 8, the comment we received from the KBAR Council. Clause 8 inserts the new section 271D and the Criminal Procedure Act, which relates to the powers of the Minister or the Director General, where a certificate of expungement has, or rather when a criminal record has been expunged, to withdraw that expungement. The Cape Bar Council proposed the following amendments to Section 271DA of the Criminal Procedure Act, namely A, paragraph A, should be amended by the insertion of the words in writing after the word applicant in the first sentence of the paragraph. We agree with that suggestion. The second comment relates to paragraph B, and they indicate that it should be amended by the substitution of the word be, of the word remain, in the last sentence of the paragraph. We agree to that. Inter alia, the criminal record is already expunged, and it's actually a withdrawal that's taking place. The next comment relates to paragraph C, and again, the KBAR Council indicated that the word in writing should be inserted after the word applicant. first comment in this clause should be amended by the insertion of the word in writing after the word service in the second line of paragraph B. We also agree to this. In essence, the functions or the powers that is exercised by the Minister or the Director General is actually administrative in nature. If one looks at the Constitution, section 53.2, in a case of an administrative action and the person's rights is adversely affected, he should be given written reasons for the act that actually affects his rights. That is also contained in the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. So I think for the ordinary layman in the street, it's quite essential to stipulate in this clause that if a decision is taken, that he should be informed in writing. Okay, the next comment that is seized on clause 10. Clause 10 amends section 309 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with appeal by persons convicted in a lower court to a high court. Clause 10 amends section 309(1)(a) of the Criminal Procedure Act to provide, amongst others, that a person who is convicted of any offence by lower court may, subject to the appeal being granted in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, appeal to the sentence to a high court, which have jurisdiction. When this provision was amended by the Child Justice Act, it failed to incorporate certain amendments that was brought about by the Criminal Law Amendment Act. And the amendments brought about by the Sentencing Amendment Act was to the effect that if a person was sentenced to imprisonment for life by a regional court in terms of the Minimum Sentences Act, the person can appeal to High Court without applying for leave to appeal. Comment was received from this clause from the Legal Aid South Africa. They indicate that the amendment is necessary. They, however, indicate or suggest rather that in order to create certainty, that the amendment should be made to apply retrospectively to 1 April 2010. That is the date when the Child Justice Act came into operation. And the reason they make the suggestion is to the effect that the person who has been sentenced from 1 April 2010 till the time that this clause will come into operation will remain in uncertainty about their rights. And our response there too is that the proposals are dedicated for the bill, and I can refer to section 49.2 of the bill, which provides that this clause, as well as clause 11, which is amendment that gives effect to clause 10, will come into operation on 1 April 2010. The next clause is clause 14. Clause 15. Clause 15 seeks to insert section 46A in the Attorneys Act to provide the idea that the Attorneys Fund may institute private prosecution against a person. The Law Society of Africa, previously when we briefed the department, we informed, when we briefed the committee, we indicated that the Law Society has requested that this power only be exercised in consultation with the Law Society concerned. New comments received from the Law Society does not address this matter any further. Comments received from the Attorney Stability Fund is to the effect that they are not in favour of exercising private prosecutions in consultation with the Law Society. And our response thereto is firstly, want to refer to the previous suggestion that was made in the committee to the effect that we can amend, of course, to the effect that private prosecutions by the Board of Control of the Attorney's Fund will take place after consultation with the Law Society of the province concerned. However, if one look at section 46, 6411 of the Tennis Act, as the legal practice bill. There's identical provision in the bill, and it does not require consultation with provincial law societies before instituting a code of prosecution. The further option for the committee's consideration is inter alia that we can provide that the Border Control may, upon written notice to the society of the province concerned, institute a private prosecution.
You want to come in now?
I just want to know how you want to deal with it, but it might be easier. I just want to, I mean, I think there is merit in saying we need consistency between the two. So maybe we need to just cross-reference with the legal practice or whatever we do decide here as well, so that they're the same.
Jake, can I just also come in on this, during this exercise, let me just go back one step. The Attorneys Act at the moment in Section 76 gives the law societies the power to institute private prosecutions. Of course, there's nothing like that before. Of the fund, now the fund is asking for that, but what I really want to say is when we were going through this particular exercise, we did go and have a look at the legal practice bill as well. And funnily enough, I'm very surprised that the LSSA hasn't said anything about it, but in the legal practice bill, there's no provision for the society, the council that we're proposing to create, for the council to institute a private prosecution, but there is in clause 64(1)(i) of the legal practice bill, there is a provision that gives the fund, the board of the fund. So I think there is. I'm just mentioning that when we do the legal practice bill again, there's a disparity. What we're doing for the Attorneys Act is to give both bodies the power to institute private prosecutions in the legal practice. It is only the fund or the board of the fund that has that right. So I think maybe we need to reconsider that when we get back to the legal practice. As Mr. Roberts has said, it was in April this year before the bill was introduced. This bill was introduced. The fund had, or the LSSA had requested that they are happy with this provision requested by the fund in this judicial matters bill if it is done in consultation with the relevant law society. And as Mr. Roberts has pointed out, and that's quite strange, they didn't take this up in their comments. I don't know whether the assumption must be made that, maybe it's something that they don't feel very strongly about and leave it be, because the Attorneys Act isn't going to be in operation, hopefully, for very much longer.
All right. But you agree, Mr. Bassett, that there has to be consistency as proposed by Mr. Chairman. Clause is clause 17. Clause 17, I mean section 78 of the Attorneys Act, since I don't provide for application by the society of the province concerned to prohibit petitioner from operating anyway on his trust account, he may appoint the curator bonus to control and administer such trust account. The amendments to section 78(8) of the Act provide that the fund may also apply for this remedy. Comments were received from the Law Society of South Africa. In the comment that we received, they mainly discussed operational procedures that are currently applicable with allegations of irregularities relating to trust accounts are received. According to the Law Society, while the Fidelity Fund may initially only be in possession of allegations of theft of trust monies, the Society will have access to other relevant information, but also the capacity to follow the fine process to investigate such allegations. Complaints against the tenants are usually first brought to the attention of the Society, which then takes appropriate steps against the said attorney. They indicate that where information or complaints in respect of alleged misappropriation of trust funds or other financial improprieties are received, the procedure adopted by the Law Society in their regulatory capacity is to immediately appoint inspectors to look into the matter, and they will then also take steps to immediately take action against the attorney concerned, and they indicate that the perception that there are, that is greater, that there are usually delays in this process, which is complete for this one. The Law Society clearly indicates that to afford the same powers to the functionaries may lead to uncertainty and duplication. And the Law Society indicates that the matter has been discussed with the Liberty Fund, and they reached an agreement to the effect that the Liberty Fund will only exercise its powers in consultation with the Law Society. Again, the responses by the department, maybe want to refer previously again, in the committee was suggested that this clause be amended to afford the board of control the right to exercise this power only after consultation with the society concerned. I again want to refer to clause 89 of the Legal Practice Law as introduced, and this does not require any consultation between the council or the board that keeps powers to drive these bodies. Further options that is proposed in this regard is in failure to afford the board the power to exercise its function, firstly upon written notice to the society of the province concerned, or otherwise in consultation with the society of the province concerned.
So when does the court consult with anybody?
No, the board.
But read the fact, the court may on application may by the
is there not merit in having the power given to both bodies and just make sure that if one body is going to exercise it, they give notice to the other?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that, but then in both clauses it would be in consultation. And as I say, this letter that I have from the LSSA dated April 2013 is an indication that this was debated between the LSSA and the fund extensively, and they did reach a compromise, and I think that compromise was
in consultation
for both clauses. Although I must just point out, I'd be failing my duty if Sarah's already mentioned that the fund has subsequently in May said the fund has noted, and here I'm talking about the institution of private prosecutions. The fund is saying it's not in favour of exercising private prosecutions in consultation with the Law Society, and would prefer that this take place with notice to the Law Society. So my understanding initially from the discussions between these two bodies, there was a broad agreement that both clauses should be in consultation. The fund doesn't seem to have any problem with in consultation relating to clause
17.
But it does just for the other one. So that's, I think it's just the committee must know that those are the developments.
All right, so we'll have to decide on what we
do.
Well, okay, we'll discuss that at the time. Yes,
and so timeline, you indicated that May was the last discussion. We now in September, has there been any more discussions between the two parties?
Not that I'm aware of, it's just the comments that were made by the fund on this particular book. There might have been.
Next clause is clause 19. Clause 19 means the Small Claims Court Act, providing that the commissioner appointed for the purpose of a particular small claims court is deemed to be appointed for any small claims court established in the province. In the department briefed the committee in this regard, the committee raised the question how this amendments were proposed, the proposed amendments were in fact on small claims court management committees that is established. And our response there too is that small claim court management committees are dealt with administratively and do not able to also be dealt with administratively. Clause 27, the next clause to be discussed. Clause 27 proposed amendments to the Minimum Sentences Act by excluding an accused person who was under the age of 18 years at the time of commission of the offence from its operation. The amendment proposed in Section 51 of the Minimum Sentences Act entails the deletion of Section 51.5b, which provides for the suspension of not more than half of the minimum sentence if the accused person was 16 years or older but under the age of 18 years at the time of commission of the offence in question, and the increase of the age of an accused person to which Section 51 does not apply from 16 years to 18 years as contemplated in Section 51.6. The Centre for Child Law commented on this clause and it indicates that it supports the amendments and that it is in line with the Constitutional Court case Centre for Child Law versus the Minister of Justice. The next clause to be discussed is clause 36. Clause 36 amends section 11 of the Child Justice Act, which deals with the proof of criminal capacity of children who are 10 years or older but under the age of 14 years and who are alleged to have committed offences. The amendment is proposed to the effect that it requires from the inquiring magistrate or child justice court to consider the cognitive, moral, emotional and psychological and social development of the child on the basis of all evidence that is placed before the court, including the report of the person appointed to evaluate the criminal capacity of the child. Centre for Child Law commented on this clause and it indicates that it supports the amendment, but it urged the committee to prompt the Intersectorial Committee on Child Justice to submit to Parliament the report as required in terms of Section 1896 of the Child Justice Act to enable Parliament to review the minimum age of criminal capacity. The Department's response to this is that Section 8 of the Child Justice Act requires the Minister to submit this report within a period of 5 years from the commencement of the Act. And the Act only commenced on 1 April 2010. So there's still time before this report needs to be submitted to Parliament. And further, the ISCCJ is currently collecting information to enable it to compile and submit a report to the Minister as is required in terms of the Act. Next clause to be discussed is clause 37. Clause 37 amends section 28 of the Child Justice Act. And this clause, or section 38, deals with the protection of children in police custody. Section 28.2a provides that if there is a complaint about any injury to a child or that a child is severely traumatized, this must be reported to the station commissioner. Section 28.2b requires the report to the station commissioner to be submitted to the National Commissioner of Police. The amendment proposed that this report must also be made available to the relevant provincial commissioner as well. Comments were received on this aspect from NICRU, who support the amendments but recommend additional independent monitoring of police cells for the purpose of checking on states of children detained in police cells, those in cold cells and in police vans. NICRU submits that the NGOs are prepared to assist if government does not have capacity for such independent monitoring. Our responses to the effect that the recommendation for outside the scope of the current amendment, and the question can however be raised whether this should not be taken up with the independent police investigative directorate.
If it seems like a reasonable proposal and we could refer to this possibly in a committee resolution.
Yes.
In our report on the first session, if we agree
that
is something that should take up.
They don't do anything.
Mr. Schaefer?
They do nothing anyway.
Well, the point is that we've at least brought it to their attention, okay?
Mm.
And when things do go wrong later on, the kind of thing is pointed at us, right?
Mm.
Remember, you're dealing with
children in police custody.
Oh, no.
So I agree with you. I share your sentiments.
Next clause, clause 42. Clause 42 and section 77 of the Child Justice Act, which deals with the sentences of imprisonment. Firstly, by the deletion of subsection 2, which provides that a child who was 16 years or older at the time of the commission of the offence, referred to in Schedule 2 of the Minimum Sentences Act, must, if convicted, be dealt with in accordance with the provision of Section 51 of the Minimum Sentences Act, and by the deletion of subsection 3 of the reference to subsection 2. These are consequential amendments to clause 27 that was already discussed. The Centre of Child Law commented on this amendment, and they indicate that they support this amendment. Clause 42 also amends section 77(4), which is a consequential amendment arising from clause 41, and provides that the child referred to in section 77(3), that is a child who is 14 years old or above, and has committed the Schedule 3 or the Schedule 2 contemplated offence, may be sentenced to imprisonment. Paragraph C of the proposed amendments go on to provide for imprisonment together with a period of correctional supervision imposed in terms of Section 75 of the Child Justice Act. The Centre for Child Law does not support the insertion of this Section 77(4)(c), which it says is confusing. According to the Centre for Child Law, if the amendment seeks to provide courts with authority to impose a sentence of correctional supervision in addition to a sentence of imprisonment, the CCL is concerned that this will be considered unduly harsh and may be set aside on review. They indicate that if the amendment is intended to give courts authority to impose a sentence of correctional supervision where a sentence of imprisonment is suspended, the CCL would support it, but would request further deliberation on the wording to be used in this section. Our response thereto is that the Child Justice Act at present does not empower a child justice court to impose a sentence of imprisonment together with, in addition to a sentence of correctional supervision. It would rather allow a child justice court to impose a sentence of imprisonment which can be converted into correctional supervision in the discretion of the National Commissioner of Correctional Services, as is in section 2761I of the Procedure Act. And according to us, it might therefore be inappropriate to include the proposed new section 772C in this clause. It seeks to give a child justice court the power to impose a sentence of imprisonment together with or in addition to a sentence for correctional supervision. However, Section 273 of the Criminal Procedure Act allows this in respect of adults. And the question might be raised that this was not, why this was not in the Child Justice Act, and further that it should maybe not incorporate in the Child Justice Act.
Can that come in there?
Yes, please.
Thank you. I think what was done when this bill was drafted, the intention of this clause, of clause 41, is to address incorrect, something that was not quite correct. But in doing that, it also added this sub-paragraph, sub-clause 4C. And I think it was done because, as Mr. Roberts has pointed out, Section 276(3) of the Criminal Procedure Act gives provides for a sentence of imprisonment as well as a sentence of correctional supervision. That has always been there, but that is now only in respect of adults, and I've got a feeling it was put into this bill because it was there for adults, and that is why I think the Centre for Child Law is querying it, and it might be considered to be too harsh, and why we are trying to address or fix an inconsistency in the legislation, the question is being raised by the burdening children even further.
Mm. Article 22, section 775 of the Child Justice Act, which provides that the Child Justice Court must, when imposing a sentence of imprisonment, antedate the term of imprisonment by the number of days that the child has spent in detention prior to the sentence being imposed. Clause 42 seeks to make it clearer by the quoted words, namely, antedate the term of imprisonment. By means. The CCL doesn't support the amendments to subsection 5 and submits that the word take into account actually weakens the protection afforded to a child and detracts from the rehabilitative aims of the Act. The Department, our response there to is that the dictionary meaning of the word antedate is a date earlier than the actual one, or to assign to a date earlier than the actual occurrence. If applied literally, it would mean that the sentence may be backdated or preceded the date of conviction. It may therefore be incorrect to use the word antedate in this subsection because the intention of subsection 5 is for the court to consider and take into account the time spent awaiting trial when determining an appropriate sentence. The court themselves has clarified this in terms of some judgments, they prefer to use the term. They prefer to use the term take into account rather than to antedate. When you look at State versus Radebe, the court actually indicate that the trial court, the correct approach where a person has been in custody for a while and needs to be sentenced, the court must take the period of detention into account and rather impose a lighter sentence, but not to antedate the sentence per se. This same goes for State versus Radebe, which is basically the same. In State versus Kruger, the court actually antedated the term of imprisonment. And that was a decision that went on to appeal. And I believe in terms of section 282 of the Criminal Procedure Act, the court can antedate the sentence.
Okay.
Second
program.
Next clause is clause 44. Clause 44 proposes amendments to section 85(1) of the Child Justice Act, which deals with automatic review of cases in lower courts. The amendments are proposed in order to clarify uncertainties that have arisen and led to special review of cases. The magistrates themselves have submitted their decisions to the High Court in order to obtain clarity on the application of section 85. The proposed amendments are in line with the judgments handed down in the special review of cases.
What was the Child
Justice
Act? How come the Child Justice Act needs so much work? I mean, that is not injustice.
Well, I think that there have been a lot of cases before the courts, and flowing from those, there's been developments. None actually has any role in the Act.
This was a very, very difficult piece of legislation. It was virtually a whole new criminal procedure act that was put in place in 2008. It is a step in the right direction. I think it's been acclaimed as far-reaching and the intentions are good. There have been, and there has to be an admission that there have been some challenges, and I think that was to be expected. I actually went to the trouble to go and have a look shortly after 1977 when the Criminal Procedure Act, the current Criminal Procedure Act, was put in place. And as part of the course, there were numerous amendments immediately after 1977.
Okay,
lots of these things only come
in the wash
afterwards, and I think, as I say, I don't want to be overly defensive that these things, I think, do happen, and I think experience does teach us a whole range of things. This was a very, very new concept.
And about the six of people who give you political instruction,
Lauren?
Yes. I think that's a little unfair to you.
No, I'm making sure that it's not his fault.
No, the Criminal Procedure Act has been there since whenever, and we've amended it over and over. You don't make the same point about the Criminal Procedure Act as you've done about the Child Justice Act.
Will you agree with me when I say it was the child jurisprudence?
Yes.
That was what meant by the child jurisprudence. It was something new.
Since it's a child group, my comments on this amendment.
Where are we, Mr. Officer? Sorry,
44.
Okay.
At the bottom. The Center for Child Law supports the amendments to Section 85, but proposed additional amendments in the interest of clarity. The Center for Child Law proposed an insertion of paragraph D of the entry proposed to read whether the child in question there appeared before a district or regional court.
Where is this?
We agree. No.
As a B, it already says magistrate or regional magistrate, so I don't understand why it's confused.
Under B. That's how it's substantial with a magistrate and regional magistrate. Does that serve the Centre for Child Law's concerns, Mr. Wright? What is in the bill at the moment?
Well, I think they tried to clarify that whole issue in order to make it quite clearer. The amended Section 85, I believe, if we put in misread it with the words that precede paragraphs A, B, C, and D, obviously. The sentence is subject to review in terms of Section 304 of the Criminal Procedure Act by a judge of the High Court having jurisdiction, irrespective of the duration of the sentence, the period, judicial officer who sentenced the child was a magistrate or a regional magistrate. It relates to a period. In terms of Criminal Procedure Act, the period is, in terms of Section 302, one of the factors that's taken into account when a certain sentence is to be reviewed, and then whether the child in question was represented by a legal representative, and then we try to insert the word, the sentence rather, the new paragraph, whether the child in question appeared before a district or a regional court. I think it's for them and for Aya to clarify that it doesn't matter where the person appeared in this case, and that it must be sent on automatic review.
Chair, the point is that it's referring to has held in the substantive rank of magistrate or regional magistrate, clearly envisaging either district or regional courts being involved.
Mr. Bassett, is that Christine?
I think you could make that assumption or come to that conclusion, but maybe it would be safer to have the paragraph D in, because paragraph B, which deals with the period, that excludes if a person has been on the bench for longer than 7 years, as Solomon has said, then there's no automatic review. So I think the B is just going to make sure, the proposed D is going to make sure that every case is going to go on review if the person appeared in the district or regional court, no matter how long the magistrate has been on the bench.
Can the insertion of D do any harm, Mrs. Schiffer?
No, probably not.
All right. Christine, okay.
The response obviously is that this amendment is a barrier to address uncertainties. The center for charter also indicates that at present, in terms of section 85.1 of the Act, in the case of a child who has been sentenced to any form of imprisonment that was not wholly suspended, or any sentence or compulsory residence in child and youth care sentence must be sent on automatic review. The CCL is concerned that the wording, the words that was not wholly suspended, exclude a child who has received the suspended sentence from the benefits of automatic review, and that this, as a result, detracts from the principle that the child must not be treated more severely than the other. The CCL argues that in terms of Section 302 of the Criminal Procedure Act, others are not excluded from such protection. The CCL then recommends that the phrase that was not wholly suspended be deleted in Section 85.1. And we agree with that.
Just clarity. I mean, adults don't automatically go on review at all, you know? So
in some cases it does. It depends if they're not legally represented. Obviously, it might go on review. In terms of Section 302.
And then it doesn't matter if it's wholly suspended or not?
No.
Okay. Thanks.
Which goes to clause 45. Clause 45 in section 87 of the Child Justice Act. Clause 45 is amends section 87 of the Child Justice Act, which deals with the expansion of certain criminal records of children. The amendments proposed to this section 87 are similar to those proposed in clause 8, which deal with the expungement of certain criminal records. Okay, the Council made the same suggestions in respect of this clause with which the Department agrees. The next one is clause 46 on page 10. And the first sentence of the comment is about the amendments. Sorry. Clause 46 amends section 97 of the Child Justice Act consequentially and provides that different categories or classes of persons may be determined for the purpose of different aspects of the development of a child referred to in the amended section 11.2b. It also provides that a minister may determine different allowances and tariffs of remuneration for different categories or classes of persons who do these assessments. The Centre of Child Law, that's what referred to the comments, they refer to the comments again in clause 36 that was discussed. And if you support the amendments to section 97 relating to a person suitable to conduct evaluation of criminal capacity of a child, we would like to caution against omitting various categories evaluating different aspects of the development of the child. If you submit that this will create a fragmented assessment that will affect the realistic picture of the development of the child, NICRO is uncertain as they are, psychologists and psychiatrists are unable to evaluate moral development since substantive and moral development are linked. With regard to payment, NICRO recommends that a set fee for criminal capacity assessment should be set while acknowledging the difference with regard to fees for certain professional structures. The response of the department is that the department conducted an extensive consultation with all role-based stakeholders in the process of determining the categories of persons competent to conduct the evaluation of criminal capacity. Various relevant professionals such as criminologists and social workers were considered.
For social workers, as the regulatory body advised against the inclusion of social workers at this stage, since the body was still working on strengthening specialisation within the profession. On the issue of the passage of psychologists and psychiatrists to evaluate moral development of the child, further inputs are still awaited from the Department of Health. The department and the relevant bodies are still working on issues of care. These comments will be taken up further in the notice in terms of section 973, which is considered for amendments.
So are you proposing that we proceed with the amended clause as is?
See, I don't quite understand why they're going on about social workers being included, because no other profession is specifically mentioned in the clause.
Look, I don't know. Okay, let's leave it at that. Okay, any other comments on the moment?
May I ask this?
Yes.
Issue on page 12 relating to the further amendments that were signed from this bill, now to be dealt with in a further judicial matters amendment bill. I'm just concerned about your timelines. How much time do you have? When did that Constitutional Court give its judgment, and why isn't it was in the initial bill,
yeah,
and that was taken out? You know, we don't want a full file of a Constitutional Court judgment timeline. Consider where we're going into now, and as we know, there's going to be less sittings and preparations for elections. And that. Do you foresee that you'll be able to finalise that further judicial matters amendment? Or, thank you.
Yes, sir.
I simply wanted to ask you about the different clause altogether, if you have it.
No, that's fine.
Agreed.
Yes.
Isabel, clause 30.
30.
Your proposed amendment to the promotion of I think we already did that in the protection of personal information. Did you go and check?
It is in the schedule to the PPI rule. The only problem is the PPI will be put into operation by proclamation in the Gazette, and I believe it will take a long time.
Okay.
I cannot say, but it's going to take a long time.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I'm not dealing with the law,
no,
but it's technical in nature,
yeah.
I believe.
Oh, I think it's been translated.
Given
there's
a lot
of other stuff there.
You know,
yeah.
We need that rule so bad.
Yes, we do.
We spam every day.
Do you want Mr. Bassett to answer?
Absolutely, please.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, it is. The translation is actually finished, so it's on its. Yes, I know Mr. Dupree and Ms. Lowe have been working on it day and night, and I think they know. And they work with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, who has got the translation unit, so they are all working on it together. But I can almost say with 100% certainty it's finished. On the implementation of that legislation, a regulator has to be put in place, an office has to be created. That regulator, once it's in place, I think the regulator, I always didn't deal with this legislation, but the regulator itself must make regulations about it. So that also has to be done. So I don't want to say it's going to take a long time, but there are some quite a few things that need to be done.
I would be good still, if we could, I wish it could come into force, because I would like, before the end of the life of this parliament, that this committee do the appointment of the regulator. That isn't, you don't think so?
I
think just why, you know as well as I do, the reason why it's important for the thing to come into force is to get business,
yeah,
and other entities in this country to get their acts in order,
yes,
to make their data systems secure,
yes,
and to start observing. That is why. So I hope nobody even reports the fact that this might take a little while.
Yeah, we are really are working on it, and I will also take that message back. I do understand that it's the best urgent, we will do everything in our
power. Now, the further question. Now, how proper is it to do this then? Because you know that another thing is going to take a little time to come into force. You now legislate. Yeah, this is the upshot of the Brummer case. What legally is this difficult that we do it there, but we do it here as well?
I don't think it will have an effect in practice. If you amend the Act here, actually, extend the period, and if it's amended again,
In practice, it will not have an effect. It's a sloppy drafting to an extent, maybe. But I think we actually need this to be in place as quick as possible by way of legislation, not wait for the PPI to be implemented. We will probably amend the PPI at a later stage.
Okay.
I just to confirm, I don't think it's a problem legally to do that. We're also doing something similar for the attorneys Act while the
legal practice law is in place.
Anything else, honourable members?
This judicial matters amendment board has a long history. It started quite a while back. And if we had to keep all the amendments in that were originally in that bill, this is already 50 clauses, it would be 150 clauses. So what we were requested to do, and I think was the appropriate way to go, is to have a look, bearing in mind that Parliament hasn't got much time left and we are getting towards the end of the administration, is to try and deal with things that are pressing and are going to go through relatively easy and are going to address challenges that we do face in practice. So that's what this bill is about. The clauses that were excised were clauses that are not that straightforward. We had lots of comments on Section 12 of the Divorce Act, so it isn't something that's going to go quite through easily. And there is going to be a lot of debate about it. We were asked to identify the provisions that can go through that are going to make a difference and that aren't going to hold up the thing. And my recollection is that that case doesn't give a deadline. It's already put in place what the law should be, and that is the position. I will just confirm, but I'm sure that is the reality. So I don't think there is any huge crisis if that isn't dealt with right now. It wasn't a time period, and it has been addressed to the extent that it felt was necessary in the judgment, and that's the law that's being applied.
Thank you, Chairman. And just the comments made by NICRA about their concerns about the expungement of records, again, that is something we could refer to in the report.
Have you read the last part of that? Over the page?
Yes.
Law Reform Commission has a discussion document, released the comments of NICRA report.
So maybe that's you waiting for.
Interesting.
I'm not sure, but I think there is in one of our acts, there is a requirement that the minister brings their review. So I think it's covered, and that doesn't work in our report as well. I can always add it in.
Review of what?
Of expansion. Because it was more complex.
Sorry, we can't hear you?
It was quite complex. I remember that in 2008 or 2009 we were looking at it. We did the expansion, but there were other issues, so we asked for a review of the expansion. So that's a useful one to come.
As a result of that report in 2008, that's why it landed up at the Law Commission for an investigation. So that's what you said.
Is NICRA not aware of that process?
I think they are aware of the process, but I think they actually raised the question why it has taken so long.
Okay. All right. Anything else, honourable members? Nothing? Okay. All right. Now, let's do this carefully. Can we ask you to do us a clean draft of your members? Yes, it's much easier for us. And we're a bit slow when we We are. No. Can you do that, Mr. Bassett?
Yeah, I just want clarity on what you mean. Is there the formal amendments on page so and so in
yes,
line?
Yes, that
what
you have to do.
Yes. Okay.
That's a requirement. You must do that.
Okay.
In addition to that.
Okay. Just add them into the actual text.
Yes,
so
a clean bill with the amendments. Yes. Can you?
We can do that.
Yes, please. All right.
Hopefully we could have that.
want to put that kind of pressure on you.
Yeah, he's already done it.
But if you've gone that far, yes, why not? So that'll help. Okay, great. Well, the question is, are they in a position to address us on that? Because the Human Rights Commission Bill and the criminal law of sexual offences, but it's different people.
Yeah, my understanding is the sexual offences and human rights are coming on tomorrow. We've got Mr. Lovescuffney coming down this afternoon for the human rights, and he's bringing somebody from constitutional development as well, because the two go together. And then on the sexual offences, I'll be dealing with the comments, but we've got people from vulnerable groups coming down who are responsible for the report. So I'm in a position to continue with the responses, but it might be appropriate
to have them present,
to have my colleagues present.
So the order tomorrow, does that mean which one first and then which one second? Sounded on your last remark as if sexual offences you would do second, or is that first?
Well, there's no, we're easy.
No, I would quite like to know. Let's say, for example, specialist on sexual offences.
Oh, I see.
And so if I know that you're doing that first in the morning and Joanne's coming down.
She wants the morning off.
I don't know the meaning of the word off. It doesn't exist in my so I would love to have the morning. I know you are, and I'm duty bound to defend myself.
No, let's do sexual offences. Is that okay, Mr. Bassett?
I'd like to think that the sexual offences would most probably be not too long, not that that is going to be glossed over, but I think the Human Rights Commission, there's still a lot of clauses and comments to go through.
I will be downstairs, so whenever you want to start on the HIV.
So we'll do sexual offences from the morning, okay?
Mm.
All right. And you'll be on call. All right.
Not from
that. All right, and will you do us the favor of informing everyone affected, okay, that we'll do sexual offences? They're welcome to sit here while we're still doing that. But once we're done with sexual offences, we'll move on to Human Rights Commission.
Okay. in the assembly itself, or specifically as some of them do by invitation. And so it's all wrong. I mean, the ministers report to Parliament, the NPA reports to Parliament, and there is no way that they can hold a press conference, especially before coming to account to us. And we obviously have the pleasure of meeting our new so it will be a matter of some moments. They can go and hold their press conference at their own precincts. And at their own precincts. At the most, they can do it afterwards. But you see, I mean, the habit has now taken root, unfortunately.
My question, I mean, we can't dictate to them how and where they want to have a press conference, but I'm just trying to understand, they asked us for permission to have it at Parliament, or
what? No, they just said prior to coming to us,
they
want to have a press conference on their annual report.
No,
but they can do that. We can't stop them.
I think it's exactly right that they asked.
Why?
It's because they're the first
to the first thing is to ask. Yeah, maybe that is the point.
Yes, that is
we
the
can't,
point.
We can't.
We can't. We can't. But, you know.
All right. It's wrong.
It's
the ministers who start. First you do your media briefing, then you're all in the
board. Yeah, and that's odd. I mean, you know, we're like an obstacle.
It's an obstacle.
Yeah. Mr. Schaefer, pardon me, Mr. Schaefer.
So, I agree with Mr. Swartz, is that there's no way we can tell the APA what they can and can't do as long as it doesn't impact on their appointment with us. And the fact of the matter is the annual report has already been tabled, so it's already in the public domain in any case. And I can well understand why they want to do damage control, but it's not going to make any difference.
Well, the damage control that should come into before this committee.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
they've not told it in
these
precincts
before
the appearance.
8th of October.
Sorry, Mr. Adams,
did
you want
to?
Yes, Mr. Adams.
Sorry, I forgot to ask. Just as a matter of clarity, those amendments to the Attorneys Act, are they going to both be in consultation? Is that what the decision was?
No, one was in writing.
Yeah.
Yes. Notice in writing.
The other one
in consultation,
yeah.
Board said, but then they recanted, didn't they?
The board is happy with in consultation for clause 17.
Yes.
Yeah.
So clause 15 is on notice.
But
on notice in writing.
To each other. So other can do it.
Okay. Is that correct, honourable members?
Yeah.
Right, fine. Anything else? Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Bassett, Mr. Bolter, and all of you. We're adjourned.
I won't rush to see it.